All right.
And we're recording.
Bam. Webcomics Weekly.
That's right.
Coming back at you.
Bitty body boom.
With a big post Emerald City Comic Con wrap up.
What a crazy con. So much happened.
What a tremendous con.
Let's call it Tremendous Con from now on.
They should.
Chris,
unless that hurts the brand.
Chris, you need to move the mic away from your nose. I can pick up all your breathing.
No, can I tell you, though?
Here,
I actually,
I'm right there.
As a quality, I like that from Chris Straub's comments. So, Chris, how would you answer this question about web design? Well, I think that the way you do it,
it's like today's guest host is Darth Vader.
Guys, the mic is actually 5 feet away. I have
Chris
asked.
Is like, oh, yeah, that comment's tremendous.
It's like a huge shout out to Chris's ears, nose, and throat doctor for clearing up that problem.
I'm coming to you from the side of a volcano.
They're calling it the earthquake of the century.
Yikes.
Good time. Anyway,
hey, what was it? I can't remember now. It's like an episode of Star Trek where at the end they're like, and you'll forget everything that happened. And then the guy's like, no, I'll never forget this week. And then he forgets. What was it, Brad, that you said when you snapped at Dave at the restaurant? We were all like, whoa.
I remember.
What was it?
But maybe Brad should say it, though.
All I remember is I called him Grandpa.
No.
Well, you need to set that up, though, as to why you called me Grandpa.
We were sitting there at the Cheesecake Factory. All of us were together. It was the whole Half Pixel crew. And we were making our drink orders. And this lovely blonde waitress asked me if I wanted to be carded. Or no, not if I wanted to be carded. She wanted to card me. Because I wanted to get if I remember right, my astute beer palate was desiring a Bud Light.
And, yeah, no kidding.
And she says, "I'm gonna need to see your identification." And so I show, and she took everybody else's drink orders and left. And it really is that safe to say, Dave? The heck?
Well, Dave? No, Dave dropped. I had to bring him back in.
At any rate, I don't want to say this next part if it's going to upset him.
What do you mean?
He deserves it.
He was really a little bit chafed that she didn't.
Listen, I think it's clear that he was, as much as he tried to play it off as like fun, he was clearly upset.
Okay.
He was clearly upset that he did not get carded.
Well, and he's got to come on and defend himself on that one.
I think it's better that if he can't.
Oh, man.
There you are.
Oh, Dave? Old Dave, man Carruthers much? Hung up on himself.
Did you accidentally hang up on yourself?
On myself. On myself.
Are off. I'm going ahead with the story. We were sitting back. I'm like, okay, I don't want to tell the next part until Dave weighs in so he can have a chance to defend himself because it had to do with, you know, you being old and everything.
Or the perception that you feel old.
That's right. Because we'll come around to that in a minute. Don't let me gloss over that by all means. But, you know, the joke became, geez, you know, I was the only one that got carded. And Dave goes, that really chafes me. I didn't get carded, blah, blah, blah. So it became kind of a running gag. And at one point, what the heck? I said something like, hey, listen, keep up, old timer. You know, we can't repeat everything for you, Grandpa. Or something like that.
Yeah.
It was somewhere along those lines. Then we all went around the table and established that I am indeed the oldest one at the table.
Mm-hmm.
But
clearly,
it didn't matter that night.
But clearly to any passing waitress, I look like old man.
No, but there was one moment where, like, Brad, you scolded him. Like, you came out of your shell and you were like...
It was like, zip it, Grandpa.
Yeah, you're like, take it easy, Grandpa. And then you immediately, your shoulders went up and your hand went in front of your mouth like, was that me? Ooh.
I remember that now.
One of the things I think we should talk about on this episode of Webcomics Weekly, just to draw it back into webcomics, is that, you know, as much as we talk about conventions as a way of self-promotion and a way of networking and a way of fan base touching, it is – boy, that sounded
fan
bad. Whoa, what? There's also something important to be said about camaraderie and getting an opportunity to kind of release all of the, you know, stress and stuff that you have kind of working so isolated. When you get to see your friends and hang out with your friends and have a good time, I mean...
God, don't say that. I just got my wife convinced that this is work.
Well, just don't let her listen to this episode.
That's what people – that's what I used to be my favorite thing about doing a con was getting to meet all the other web cartoonists.
Yeah. But Brad, because, your wife's name is Caroline, right?
Yeah.
Caroline, if you're listening, trust us when I say it is work being friends with Brad.
Okay. Now, Brad, tell us how you write Evil Inc.
He knows that beyond the shadow.
But like the it was an incredible time just hanging out with you guys. But yes, Dave was miffed, genuinely miffed, that he did not get carded.
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe that's conjoining with parenthood, but I suddenly felt like the oldest man alive.
Well, you know, there's another explanation for this that doesn't actually have anything to do with that. She just might have been somewhat attracted to me, and
jeez.
And my address.
That's Brad. I think we can all agree that that is the most likely scenario. So you're probably
yeah. What, let me ask you something. Why are you afraid of your wife hearing that we enjoy each other's company on a friendship level, but you're perfectly fine with her hearing that the waitress was hitting on you?
We are learning far too much about Brad's relationship right now.
I have no answer for that.
Uh-oh, I just got pressing news from Joe Keating,
uh-oh,
who says, do you have a second? And I said, yeah, what's up? And he goes, I just want to let you know we're nearly sold out of how to make webcomics.
Oh, what? Nice.
Let me ask him what he means.
That means we can start working on the second edition.
What do
oh,
you,
my God.
What do you mean? Like, we have no more in stock? That's bad. I have orders to send. Reports are showing that we've sold another 2,438 on top of the original 2,600. We're down to 152 copies left.
Oh, God. I just put in an order last week, though. I need some.
Uh-oh.
Too late. They're all of a sudden being sent to my house.
Oh, hey, you know what, though? On a bright note, we can correct all of the
yes, the many typos.
The various five or six typos that we've noticed
that's
in the book.
Right. And
all right.
On a brighter note, those first editions become collector's editions.
Yeah, look at us, man.
Dang.
This pisses me off. I've never sold out of a PvP book like this.
Somebody do the math. How many months has it been?
I don't know. When did we talk about it first?
Well, hold on a second. Let me in my brain sort out what was supposed to be the debut date with what was actually the debut date.
I just have to go back to when did I hate you guys? That was January. That was January.
No, wait a minute. This thing hit the streets in March, didn't it?
It hit streets in March.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, that's not bad.
It's not only not bad, but like I'm getting word from Image that they're like, this is nuts. That's the official word from Image. This is pretty effing
it
nuts.
It is nuts.
Scott, ask them in the follow-up IM, just be like, can we have more booth space in San Diego?
Tie that in. Yeah.
Immediately follow up with that as a question. Can we get 10 more?
Here. Okay, I'm typing this in. Joe, if you don't want us to take this book to Dark Horse, you need to make sure we get 20 feet of booth space in San Diego.
Joe, I have Scholastic.
I'm just saying.
That diffuses it, but keeps it strong.
And then smiley face. And then
winky face.
Winky face.
Uh-oh.
And his response is, ha, 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 you're such a... Oh, I can't say that on the podcast.
Oh, boy.
Does anyone know anyone at Dark Horse?
Well, hey, Dark Horse, if you're listening, we're open.
One more aside before we get on questions. Oh, wait a minute. He's saying that he talked to Brad and we're already down for two tables.
Oh, great. Good, good, good.
Right. Really?
He could not promise that at that point, but if that is the case, then that's good.
Good. I was worried.
Someone might have just walked into my house, and I'm actually my brother, so hold on a second.
Pick your door.
We'll talk amongst ourselves. We were talking about Emerald City before that.
Well, yeah.
Let's just make sure Scott's not getting robbed first.
Hold on.
His brother has two Great Danes, so...
Me
this
to go
would
get
be
my
where on CSI they would really want to be listening for, like, clues.
Oh, right. It's too bad we're not on CSI.
Hey, so
get your black light out. I know you got one.
What am I looking for, exactly?
I don't know, but they always use a black light. Isn't it? I haven't seen
it.
Seen an episode. I just
man, nowadays they're using quantum teleportation devices and... Yes, we found evidence on the inside of his mother's womb.
he is the murderer. He was destined to be a real jerk.
He was always the guy who did it.
That would be a great CSI, by the way. I would not want to see that zoom shot. I love the building Brad Tiger laugh. That's one of my favorites. Oh. Well, okay, so let's assume for a half second that Scott is currently being robbed. What do we do about it?
Well,
I don't know. I was on a video chat with him earlier, and he was taunting the dogs. And
I'm back.
Do that while I'm watching.
I'm back. I'm not used to these dogs and what they get riled up about. It could be a squirrel. Could be a burglar. Sorry. Anyway. Where were we?
Well, you know what?
Or burglar?
I want to go back to the idea of Emerald City Comic Con because I'm going to be honest here, and I had the most fun that I've ever had at a convention with you three.
Yes.
So a little public shout out to you guys because you made that convention so dang fun.
Dude, we had a blast.
It was awesome.
And I think we have to acknowledge our host, Jim Demonakis, his brother George, their whole gang, all their volunteers. Hey, have you guys ever seen such dedicated volunteers?
Oh, my God, no.
No, it was an amazing
con. When it was time for us to go to our panel, there was a guy who came up. Now, Dave backed me up on this. We were both kind of starting to fret a little bit in that we didn't know where the panel room was. You know, in San Diego, you try to find a panel room, and it becomes this whole maze. At other conventions, you don't know, you know, you've got to scope that stuff out in advance. I'm starting to get antsy, and all of a sudden, a volunteer shows up. Hey, guys, I'm here to take you to your panel, and he walks us right down to the panel. There was no stress. There was no nothing. I mean, and that was just a snippet of the amount of work these volunteers. I mean, if they did that for us, they did it for everybody.
Yeah.
And these are all guys that live in Seattle. The Demonakis brothers and the volunteers there, they own and run a comic book shop called The Comic Stop in Linwood. And it all, you know, I mean, I remember the first 2 years we went, I asked him how he was doing with the show, and he says, well, you know, your first couple of years are always at a loss. So, like, Jim does it because he loves comics and he loves the people, and it shows, man. It shows in the way that you're treated. We were treated like rock stars at that show, guys. Did you walk around at all?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, there were important people at that show, like, in comics. And they had, you know, they were, you know, in spaces that weren't as primo as what Half Pixel got.
Marvel guys, DC guys, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
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 Well, I found it particularly telling when Brad kicked Stan Lee. I thought that was a very
But that always happens.
He was breathing my air.
Yeah, Brad was like, "Print is dead, Excelsior, kick."
I just heard Brad go, "Give Kirby some credit," and kicked him. That's all I heard.
Enough said. Enough said.
Enough said.
I've never been talking that well. And what? This is going to be one of those cases where I listen back to the podcast and realize I missed something else that Chris said.
That's every podcast.
I know. I realize after the fact that you're the most brilliant member of the team every time I listen to these things.
Well, it's because my mic doesn't work.
Why don't you marry him, Brad?
You're brilliant too.
Nobody believed that.
So heartfelt.
So anyway, listen. Not that we don't do San Diego every year. Not that we don't understand there are bigger maybe cons out there. I'm telling you, if you can get to a show like Emerald City, or even the Baltimore show, same kind of deal where it's run by comic book shop owners that love what they're doing. Whoa, what is that?
Don't know.
What was what?
Oh, I heard. I think my phone is interfering with the speakers. But that's the way to go, man.
Yeah, and I'm noticing. Oh, sorry, Brad. Go ahead.
I just was going to say big props to those guys. They run a fantastic show, and I've never been treated better.
Yeah.
It also didn't hurt that while we were there, a millionaire took us to dinner.
Wow, was that great or what?
That was awesome. I need to give a big shout out to my man Will Shipley,
yeah.
who took us all out to a restaurant called Elemental. And today I was reading on CNN.com. It was like, eat like the locals in Seattle. And one of them was Elemental at Gasworks. This no reservation restaurant is difficult to get into, but if you can, you know, blah blah blah. And I thought, been there and done that. CNN.com.
Really?
Yeah. But you know what the best part of that whole dinner was? Was on the way home, Brad Geiger was so schnookered that he failed at a major joke.
No,
that's the memorable moment.
I got nothing. I thought you were going to talk about driving on the wrong side of the street.
No. My wife was completely sober, and she took a turn on the wrong side of the street, and all the drunk people in the truck had to tell her, you're driving on the wrong side of the road. She was stone cold sober, had not had one drink that night, designated driver, driving on the wrong side of the road because Seattle roads are confusing. But we're driving down the road, and I was
– but I can't defuse this somehow.
Nope. I was snookered to the point where I was doing that thing where as you drive down the road, you just read out loud every sign you pass, like, Manny's Donuts, Cleaners, you know, what is Martinizing? Who cares? What sign's next? And
well, I remember I had been going on about a 10-minute run with Pagliacci's Chinese food.
Chinese food. And so,
hey, welcome to Pagliacci's Chinese food. We got the best General Tso's in town. What do you like? You like noodles? We got noodles here at Pagliacci's Chinese food. Anyway, so Brad, we're around the corner, and what was it called? Unusual?
No,
furniture?
It was called Far-Fetched. Far-Fetched Furniture. And I go, Far-Fetched Furniture, and it went quiet in the van, and Brad goes, hey, I didn't know you could get wicker from. Oh my God! It was he could not finish the joke. Could not finish it.
It was so awesome. Froze up. I had nothing. I could not think of a name of a city. Oh, you know what? For the crowd in the, if I would have said any name of any city in the entire world, you guys would have at least given me a chuckle.
Right.
The best part of the whole joke is that you heard Far-Fetched Furniture and your brain went, all right, Far-Fetched Furniture, it's time to construct a joke. It's Brad's time to shine. I'm going to set one up. And so you're like, hey, I didn't know that I could get, and you didn't say furniture, you said wicker. You picked a funny furniture.
But that makes it – that's funny.
No, it's good.
Better.
But he spent everything he had left on wicker. And then when there was nothing left for a location of where the wicker came from, when wicker had him completely tapped, all he could do was look around as if like, what, wicker ain't good enough for you sons of bitches? It was wicker. Who sits on that anymore?
That's my A material.
The thing
that has me panicking over here, and Scott said before we left, your assignment is to come up with the perfect joke for that lead.
You've got to finish that joke.
I've still got nothing.
Mm.
I've still got nothing. So
here's what we'll do, Brad. To tie this all into Webcomics Weekly, let's make this a contest.
Okay.
We're going to have a contest on Webcomics Weekly. Far-Fetched Furniture was the name of the store that we passed, Far-Fetched Furniture. Brad decides, I'm going to be the big man and make a joke. And it was, hey, I didn't realize you could get wicker from. So, for those of you listening, please email Kurtz at pvponline.com. The perfect ending to that joke.
And no, do it on the forum. Save yourself 10,000
okay.
on the forum.
All right, we'll do it on the Webcomics Weekly forums, and then we'll pick a winner, and I'll do a sketch for the winner.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a great prize.
I'll do a sketch.
I'm amazed at the vehemence, the vitriol. You guys remembered that flub.
Hey, listen, man. If Brad was going to try to shoot a basketball, we wouldn't care because we're not basketball players, but we're cartoonists and we're in the funny business, and that just made us all look bad. All right? We're trying to sell out of books here, pal. And we ain't going to do it with, hey, I didn't know you could get wicker from, I guess we should take some mailbag at some point.
Well, before we mailbag it, I actually have a question for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
And this is actually a heartfelt question. So, all right. So I have noticed.
Where do babies come from?
How do I change a diaper? That's what I need to know. I think I'm doing it wrong.
Have you mastered the ability to grab both ankles at the same time and lift?
Yes.
That's
yes.
a special little hand thing.
Can I tell you that, Brad, even worse than that, I have developed an amazing monkey-like ability to pick things up with my big and second toe.
Oh.
Hey, I got a question for you, Brad, because I don't know that Dave has stumbled upon this yet. I don't have my own kid, but I take care of my nephew. And I immediately mastered the both, because I got gigantic ape hands, but I quickly mastered the grab both ankles, lift them up. And then the other hand deals with a diaper. But now that I've got both hands in use, what the hell do I do when the little shit reaches for his own poop?
you panic. what you do, Scott, is you tell Chris to keep his hands up by his chest.
I'm not changing you again, Chris.
I do chant that to my youngest. Hands up, feet down. Hands up, feet down. I do it so much I don't even think about it.
Oh, that's smart.
So what was your heartfelt question that we interrupted, Dave?
All right, so here's my question. It's about Twitter, all right?
Oh, okay.
So all three of you guys are on Twitter, and I noticed, 10,000 other cartoonists are on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you log in or launch it or bring it in as a little app, but I have not...
It was all farms!
We're not going to get anything done on this podcast, are we?
No.
That's the good spirits we're in after Emerald City.
We're too high from that con.
Probably.
I'm sorry. I won't interrupt again.
The headline description for this podcast is going to be, episode 92. We talk about Brad and wicker furniture. All right, so here's my question. Twitter, pretend I'm an old man who gets carded at Cheesecake Factory for a second. What? Because for me, it looks like just another waste of time. How do you guys feel it builds your business or builds your audience or builds your interaction?
Wow. So already you've judged us.
I have. I've made a very firm judgment on Twitter, not on you. Still, love you like brothers. But
Dave, you who think of it as so important to connect with your audience, surely you wouldn't shun another avenue of connecting with your audience.
Surely I wouldn't, Chris, and yet somehow I do with this one. I don't see. I want you to sell me on this.
Dave,
Twitter is halfway between a blog, a instant message, and a forum.
Here's I'll explain it to you real simply, Dave, and this is not a setup for a joke, okay? Twitter is a way of giving a false sense to your readers. And I mean that because not because you're tricking them, but because how much could a person really glean from you at 140 characters at a time? But it's a way of giving your readers a sense that they are experiencing your day with you. That they're having a part of what you're experiencing at the moment. So, for example, let's say that you are finishing up Ding and you're about to draw the new PvP strip. You would make a blog post about that. That's not important enough. But you can make a Twitter about it. And it kind of lets your fans feel like they're hanging out with you. Like they know what's going on in your day. And as silly as that seems, it's mesmerizing. And I don't mean like because I'm so interesting, but I feel that way about the people whose Twitter feeds I follow. it really makes you feel like you're hanging out with all these people. I know what's going on in – or at least I feel like I know what's going on in Rich Stevens' life because he posts Twitter posts about the mundane things he's doing, and you kind of get an impression of it. So do you know the feeling you get from reading James Kochalka's sketchbook diaries?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. There's nothing. There's not one day of the sketchbook diary that is so important. It's necessarily stands out from the rest. But overall, it gives you an impression of his life, or what he's presenting as his life, and then once you've captured that audience, you have a rare opportunity to take advantage of it. For example, one of the things I do in my Twitter feed is I give coupon codes for my store to just my Twitter feed. So like in my Yahoo store, I can make a coupon code for 10% off books, for example. And then I'll say, hey, for Twitter followers only, here's 10% off the books today. It's only for today. By tomorrow, the code will be gone. I did that one time, and I had 400 people buy books.
Bam.
Yeah, right? So, you know, and but that's what Twitter's about. And the cool thing for you is that they can respond to you. So you don't have to follow everyone that responds. But if someone hits a response to you and you tell Twitter to feed you your responses, you can kind of get a little bit of feedback from your fans too. So it's just a quick and painless way to interact with your readers. And the best part is it works mobily. So you can text to 40404, and that goes to your Twitter feed.
Yeah. You just give it your cell phone number kind of thing in the system? And
yeah, you tell it in the system when you sign up. You give it your information. It gives you a text thing that you can text to. You know, that is if you don't have a phone like an iPhone or a Sidekick where you can hit the net anyway. But yeah, you could send a text on your phone, and then that goes straight to your Twitter feed. So, for example, Mike Krahalik from Penny Arcade is in France this week, and he was Twittering from his phone. And, you know, it was really exciting today because it said, heading to the Louvre, I'll bring my sketchbook. And that was really exciting. You know, he was nowhere near the website or a computer to make a blog post. It wasn't important enough to make a blog post, but it's kind of cool. And I know what he's working on right now or what he's doing. And that's what Twitter's all about.
And I'll just underline that a bit. In terms of microblogging, everything that Scott said is absolutely true. It's for those little incidental things that aren't big enough for a blog post. But, you know, I kind of bought along on all of these social networking things that came along in the last year or so. MySpace, Facebook, all of these things. And for me, none of them really took off. I did a and as a result, I didn't really follow up a whole lot on them. For a while, I was posting every blog post that I did on my MySpace blog, and I was doing a whole lot of stuff with Facebook, and I still keep up with those things to a certain extent. But when I started doing Twitter, I started getting such an enormous response. I find out every day 3 or 4 more people are following my Twitter feed, and when you get a response like that, it goes beyond can I make sense of this, and it just becomes I got to do this.
And it's a
you want a slow clap right here?
Something, anything.
Oh man, crickets, nothing here. Yeah, it's just a different way to interact. And it's kind of quick and painless, and what's freeing about it is I think there's kind of an unspoken feeling of dread when you make a blog post of, boy, this better be important enough. I better phrase it right. I better make it sound great because I'm taking up real estate on my site for it.
Right.
And it's knocking down something else that's important. Yeah, you could post anything that pops into your mind that's not important enough for your blog and your Twitter feed. And your readers will love you for it.
So, in your guys' opinion, I should try it then.
It can't hurt.
Huh. Okay. All right, I will give it a try then.
I actually had fun today because I signed up for Twitter back when it first launched and it was all exciting. But I didn't really find much of a use for it. But then I realized recently I started using the little Mac client Twitterific. I don't know if anybody's using that.
Oh, anymore. I use the hell out of it. It's the best, Dave. You've got to get Twitterific.
It's like having a public instant message conversation, and I went back and forth with Malky for about an hour just making up stuff. And now why not just let everybody read that instead of doing one of those obnoxious, I had the funniest conversation with Malky. Here it is, paste, 150 lines. The fact that you're limited to, is it 140 characters?
Yes.
You kind of have to bring your A game. So don't start unless you're prepared.
Yeah, and Dave, it's not the posting that'll take you away. Like, for example, you might worry about, like, I know for a while you turned off instant message because you worried about it being a time sink.
Right.
Posting on Twitter is real quick. You make a post, you move on. The problem is reading Twitters. I spend way too much time reading what everybody's doing. But making a post is real quick.
Okay. Because, you know, as you guys well know, running a webcomic business is a huge time consideration in terms of the product, the shipping, the creation of the comics, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to jump in on something that I thought, well, it's neither going to build an audience nor bring in money. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe it is a much bigger audience builder or at least a fan service than I thought it was.
It is. It is, Dave.
Well, that's you know what? I thank you for answering my mailbag question.
But did you, Dave, did you catch how I gave you a way to monetize it too? I
threw you did, and actually, you know what? I hadn't even thought about the idea of coupons, and that's pretty genius.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although I would have to talk to Philip about using coupons in the store. I think
well, you wouldn't. Maybe you don't need to do that. Maybe you just set up a special page with a special bargain, and you only.
Oh, that's the way it's done.
And then you let your Twitter feed know about it,
like a special bundle pack or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Oh my goodness, Scotty Kurtz teaching me how to run my business, loving it, sending you some chocolates as a thank you. And then, like, tomorrow morning you open a FedEx package. Wow, he really did send chocolate.
I want a lock of your baby's hair.
All right, Brad, since I am not in front of my email inbox, do you mind bringing home some mailbag questions?
I have one that I think is going to be a good one. At least it's one that intrigued me.
All righty, let's do it.
This one comes from Patrick Lewandowski at freaksandsqueaks.com. Now, it's Freaks N, the letter N, Squeaks.
Right.
Okay.
That guy.
That guy.
He posts on the Half Pixel forum quite a bit, so if you're looking for his URL, you can find him there. New question for you to discuss. While there's been lots of talk about how to grow a comic, audience, business, etc., the new question is, what kills a comic? Let's just say you're kicking butt with your comic, hits are up, people are buying stuff, then one day your audience is cut in half. Why? What are the common mistakes for a cartoonist to make? What are the things to avoid? I ask this because I was thinking about what I read 10 years ago and what I read now, and the two have changed. There are strips I've added, but some I've dropped. So what kills a comic?
Wow, that's a great question. All right, you know what? I'll start.
Go ahead.
All right, so one of my philosophies is that you're always gaining 10%, you're always losing 10%. So one of your business strategies is to actually be gaining 15 to 20% so that when you lose 10%, you're still on a growth path. Because at any given time, and these are just made-up numbers, so don't pay too much attention to the numbers, the philosophy of it. I think at any given time, you're losing a tenth of your audience, and you're gaining a tenth or more of your audience. So you've got to make it interesting enough and compelling enough and easy to jump into enough so that if a new reader comes to that page, they're not like, hey, great, but I have no idea what this is about, so I'm not going to invest the time into it. Or, hey, great, but not funny enough to keep me here. And you've got to keep feeding that cycle because you'll always be losing 10 to 15 to 20% of your readership, and you'll always be, hopefully, gaining 10 to 15 to 30% new readership to replace them. That's one thought of mine.
Well, I'm gonna piggyback on that, and that is, and you didn't come right out and say it, have you guys ever heard of any comic strip that loses half of its audience overnight?
No.
He
doesn't list an example, but I guess that's where I'm headed on this. I think that his fears may be just a little bit exaggerated, or let's just say, let's not say overnight. Let's say in a month's time,
In a half year's time. Yeah,
I guess you could go on a racist rant and cut your audience in half one day, just shock them.
You could have a DNS error, maybe that cut off half of your readership. It sounds like this guy is worried the same as my brother was after he dropped all of his weight, that he would eat one peanut butter sandwich and wake up the next day and be fat again. You know, it doesn't happen that way. But nothing, crickets on that.
No, I was actually doing joke construction, but I didn't want to do a Brad Geiger swing and a miss on Wicked. So.
You've shaken us, Brad.
Can I tell you, by the way, there is no. I always hate myself when I do that because there is no nicer man in comics than Brad, and I always feel like I'm picking on him.
David, you know what? I spent a little bit more time with David than I expected this last weekend, and he is not the person that you think.
I think you're talking about Brad there.
What did I say?
You said David. David. That's okay.
Oh. Well, hold on a second.
No problem, Chris. I appreciate that.
Let me start over. David, Brad is not the guy that you think. Brad will talk later about Dave.
What? No, I'm confused.
No. Look, what I'm saying is that I used to think that Brad was this innocent guy, but like a couple times this weekend, man, he went snappy. He went not Midwest.
Like the time he was doing lines of coke off of that
whore.
No? Yeah, did that happen? All right. I don't even know why we were on that.
I know. Okay, well, anyway, we were answering the question that, and I think you're right. There's no, Brad, you can continue with it, but I think there's no way that the strip will overnight lose audience.
Right.
Or Scott was saying something.
And here's the deal. I think as with all things, it's a question of perception. Because listen to what he says later. He goes, I asked this because I was thinking about what I read 10 years ago and what – or I'm sorry, read. That's one of those words. What I read 10 years ago and what I read now, and the two have changed. So he's got this pardon the term – egocentric view of the world, that if he did that, then everybody's doing it at the exact same time. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I know that at any given time, somebody has decided today that – they've read Evil Incorporated for the last time. It just isn't doing it for them, and they've deleted me from their bookmarks. And that's okay. Every reader has a lifespan. Every reader has a beginning, middle, and an end. And every reader you pick up today is a reader that you're going to lose sometime down the line. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the goal is to keep them as long as possible, but everybody's going to leave. And you've got to be okay with that.
Yeah, it's a cycle, right? You've got to have new people coming in all the time, and you have people. I mean, think about all the things that you used to be really into 5 years ago that you just don't spend that much time on anymore.
Like right. Starland Vocal.
And actually, that goes into a conversation I wanted to have with you, Scott, and I might have it here.
Wait, what was that joke? What was that joke?
Chris says, like Starland Vocal Band.
I don't know what I saw in
it. I totally missed that. Sorry, I talked over.
Skyrockets in flight.
All right. Brad was saying no.
No, this is a conversation I want to have with you, Scott, and this is a good place to have it because you brought it up during the podcast. You were saying, you know, gee, you feel as if maybe you're getting older and you're going to lose touch with your readers. And again, I say to you, egocentric. You feel as if you're the only person getting old. Your readers are getting old.
But that's bad, Brad.
That's what's happening
to comics.
The people that are coming in as baby boomers retire and have more time in front of a computer. What I'm trying to say is I don't think you have to fear as much as you do your tastes and your style maturing. Because the internet is going to be – the people who read stuff on the internet are going to be maturing right along with you. And I don't think the internet is going to be a hangout for all very young kids as it was in the 90s. I think the internet – the median age of the internet is going to grow a little bit.
That's true.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean we're all going to age and we're all going to write what we know, and that's a different argument.
Right.
You can't write for 13-year-olds when you're 50. It's probably not
going to work. No, but see, here's I guess my concern with that is that what's happening in comic books right now is that everyone's very concerned about the fact that the age of the typical comic book reader is aging higher. So in other words, there's no new people coming in. It's right. All the same people just getting older and older and older. And so the industry isn't recycling itself. So take that on a smaller level, which is just my business, the industry of PvP. It's like when I hear people tell me my daughter really loves PvP, my son traces Skull all the time, they don't get all the jokes, but they really like the characters. I get excited. Like, I see kids come up to my booth, and they see the plush, or they see Skull on the cover, and they go, ooh, what's this? And then I say to the parent, look, you know, you might want to read it first because they want to buy it for them. That excites me. But because I want new readers, younger readers coming in to keep it alive, because if my reader base just ages, then it's the same readers, and that's a fixed number that's going to die off as we progress on. Because how long can you maintain a fanaticism about any one thing?
True enough, but as they're being replaced, they might not be replaced by young kids. They might be replaced by older people who are coming to the web.
Yeah, and that's where I would chime in and talk about overall audience size. And here's sort of the magic of webcomics is that even the biggest ones among us still are only tapping in a tiny percentage of the English-speaking audience in the world. So there's still – so even, Scott, if you were to say, well, I'm not tapping a younger audience, even if you could continue to refresh or expand in your existing demographic as it ages – that's still a huge audience in the English-speaking world.
Yeah, you don't. I don't think you have to worry that everybody in the world who is your age, that is a gigantic audience. I don't think you have to worry about continually reaching younger.
Yeah, no. Well, I disagree. The reason why I disagree is because do you think that Garfield has survived this long because its user base has continued to age, or do you think new kids are coming into Garfield?
I think both. Okay. I think Garfield's a unique sort of thing in the sense that let me put it this way. We've had this conversation before. I think something that appears in a newspaper is a different selling proposition than something online.
Oh, so, and I think it's different from a comic book too, because if you had the Garfield is not suddenly going to become adult because the median reader is 45 and Garfield's dealing with heroin because that's, you know, that's adult.
Because that's the average concern of a 45-year-old.
Well, yeah, apparently. To my mind, yes. I'm not there yet, but I'm imagining that.
So look, the thing is, the bottom line is that if the work is compelling and the content is quality, it's going to attract somebody to it. Now, I used to talk to Jeff Smith about this and about Bone, his comic book, and he said that, you know, when it started, there were two or three issues, and then it just took off. And I mean, like, through the roof. And, you know, there was a peak where it was like, man, the money's never going to stop coming in. And then interest waned down, and he, you know, continued his story for 10 years. And I said, well, you know, how do you maintain it when the interest isn't spiking anymore the way it was when it first really just hit the scene? And he says, well, you know, you try to spike as high as you can because in that you'll get a core audience that no matter what you do, not that you will feed them crap, but even if you fed them crap, they will never stop buying your stuff. And if that gets big enough, you can live off that forever. And so I thought, well, that's pretty interesting, but that seems like a plan B that I don't want to rely on. And I've seen that happen with people that I've worked with in the past. You know, John Kovalik has done a comic in the past called Dork Tower, which kind of appealed to the Dungeons & Dragons tabletop gaming group. And there was a point right before I joined Dorkstorm Press where that thing was just everywhere. And he's just been kind of living off that core audience that will never, ever leave him since then. And I mean, it's for the strip. Now, John had his stokes and other fires, like he had Apples to Apples, that game, you know, he had a part in that game, and other game products like Munchkin and stuff like that. But it just seems to me like if I'm going to swing, I'm going to swing for the fences, and I don't just want to build some core audience that's going to stay with me, and PvP will get stale, but I'll live off the people that love it no matter what. I want it to keep changing and growing and bringing new people in, and is that realistic? Maybe a strip only has a finite number of years, then you have to create something else.
Well, like, I think that there's a real comfort in one of the things you said, Scott, which is that once you have a certain type of person, you have them for life. And yeah, you can build that audience, but that's why my business and creative strategy with Sheldon is that I know that I will always have, once I have them, I will have a percentage of reader for life, but I've got to keep my refresh rate up. And that's got to be your strategy for any strip, is that in my own mind, and who knows how to quantify it, but 20 to 30% of my readership will always be in flux. So I've always got to have a bigger inflow than outflow of readers.
Yeah.
Knowing that my core audience will always be there, but you always want to incrementally add to that core audience too. So that, you know, from 2009, I have 5 to 15% more of my core audience than I did the year before.
And that's why when people ask me, well, I don't know if you guys are getting this a lot this weekend, but one of the most popular questions I get asked about the book is, hey, aren't you worried you guys are making competition for yourselves with this book? And my answer is no. Anything that increases attention to our market, to our industry or whatever we're trying to build here is that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thumbs up for me, because I was talking to my dad about this. I know Brad wanted me to talk about it in this show. My dad really, I learned this weekend, groks a lot more about my business than I ever wanted him to, because I
and
now
– one of them is to not use the word grok because it made you seem 50 years old.
Right.
Does that word come back? I've heard it a lot.
This is me lashing back at the waitress 2 weeks later.
Listen, Brad, I would not have – or listen, Dave, I would have carded you. I find you young and sexy.
Dave, I would have adopted you.
Dave, what is it about us that Scott can't keep the two of us straight today?
Today, I always do that. I constantly transpose your names.
Brad, it's matching facial hair is what it is.
How about this? How about from now on, you're both collectively known as Brave.
Brave. I like that.
Or Dad.
I was going to say. All right. So anyway, Dad. No, I'm calling you guys Dad. I like that better than Brave. No, but my father, and I know Brad wanted me to talk about this, but my father was talking to me today, and I guess he and my brother have been in cahoots, and there's another word, cahoots, secretly discussing how, internally in the family, they discuss how, you know, Scotty's doing great, but he doesn't realize that he's got a very small audience compared to the bigger scope of what's out there, and he needs to do, you know, something to really break out, and then he'll be set for life. And my dad, who is hitting retirement age, is really concerned now about the retirement of his boys in the future and us to start planning now. And so he's really put it in my head that I need to be thinking bigger, not because what I have now isn't good enough, but if you can, like, you know, like I said, if you're going to swing for the fences. But how possible is that? I mean, does PvP's been around for 10 years. Does it have enough juice in it left? Is it just a matter of it breaking out and finding the bigger audience that it hasn't found yet?
Yeah, on some level, yes. I also think it's a matter of stick-to-itiveness. Like, even you just doing it 10 years shows you've got that. So another 10 years from now, you can't help but have a bigger audience. But as far as breakout, I mean, there's probably a lesson there for all of us that we could all up our game by a percentage of time spent and do much better with it, you know?
Well, and not only that, but, I mean, we just got done talking about this to a certain extent in that you still have a very small section of the overall audience that you could be pulling. And as webcomics in general become more widespread and more widely known, you are going to reap the benefits of that. I mean, let's face it. We just get back from Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, and you know it's very webcomics friendly. It's very much a safe haven for us, and we feel as if everybody knows what a webcomic is. And then you go out on the street, and you realize that's not really the case. And as more and more people are brought in by some of these really big breakout comics, like XKCD and Prairie Bible Fellowship, the ones that really kind of seem to, as we've said in the past, hit the lottery, you know, just get huge.
Yeah.
It's not a zero-sum game. Those guys bring in future Evil Inc. readers. They bring in future PvP readers, you know?
Right.
Well, and here's my advice also to people listening, and this has been my mantra from the beginning, is slow burn. I don't want a big explosion, because it feels like if you have a huge explosion, then it's done, it's over. But if you have a slow burn, you know, you can really establish something that is going to carry you into the retirement years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always I love the fact that every month Sheldon grows by somewhere between 2% and 5%, because to me that's such a manageable growth. I don't want growth that's 20% to 25% a month, because or bigger, because at that point and not far off, I'm going to have to start saying questions like, all right, is it worth it for me to spend $10,000 on a PR person? Is it worth it for me to spend, you know, a year's salary for someone to be a business manager for Sheldon? You know, and I want to be able to grow the business in a manageable size by myself for as long as possible before having to have big expenditures. But in answer to our earlier question, Scott, maybe it's you're reaching a point where to really break big, you're going to have to spend $20,000 to $50,000 to take a few new steps, you know?
Mm-hmm. This kind of ties in back to the guy's original question. How often do you guys keep tabs on, like, Google Analytics? Because I started checking – I check mine maybe once every 2-3 weeks. I'm not worried that the thing is going to collapse overnight and nobody will have told me, you know.
Yeah.
But how often do you look? Like once a month?
You know what's funny? I read something in actually in Entrepreneur Magazine, which stuck with me, and it's proven so true. It's that numbers that you track are numbers that grow.
Hmm.
And I found that to be so helpful and so true, too, because what that basically is saying is if you're tracking numbers, and in my case it was store numbers and readership numbers, if you're tracking it, it's taking up a bigger part of your mind share in your work week, and you're taking steps that are almost self-corrective, even without knowing it, that are helping to grow those numbers. So you know what I mean? You're both making conscious and unconscious decisions that are rising your readership and rising your income levels and rising your book sales and doing all sort of stuff.
That makes sense.
So I like that. I really like the idea that numbers that are tracked are numbers that grow.
Yeah. I have not been super good at tracking, keeping track of analytics lately, and I went back to it, and I felt like I was a little lost. Like, I have to start over now. Like, I have to start paying attention today, and then in a month I'll know where I am again. But, you know, like my friend Gary said to me the other day, hey, I noticed you made a post about the Cintiq. And I said, yeah. And he goes, you need to pay attention to your Google Analytics number for the next 2 days and see if mentioning that legitimately has increased your revenue. You know, because a lot of people will fake a blog post about something in the hopes that it will trigger good AdWords. But Google, I don't know how they do it. They somehow know how to track shit that's legitimate or not. And so I made a legitimate post. I got a Cintiq as a gift for the anniversary. I made a post about my first impressions. That's what they're looking for. And he's like, keep track of your Google AdSense numbers. And it didn't even occur to me to do that because my brain's been out of the game on keeping track of that stuff. But I don't know. I think you can get caught up in that minutia too. I just want to make sure that I'm setting myself up for the epic win and not the epic fail.
Well, like that's why to me I was asking about Twitter, because to me tracking numbers, and most specifically because I'm now doing this for my living, tracking sales numbers, to me that's not minutia that I'm getting caught up in. That's a critical part of continuing my life as a cartoonist.
Yeah.
And you can say that, well, that's you, Dave, is selling out as a businessman. Well, no, it's not. It's me continuing my dream as a cartoonist by paying the hell attention to my business, you know?
I would not say that to you at all. But that's why
I fear things like Twitter, because I don't want too much minutia to take away from what is actively growing the business. But that's why I'm saying, if you guys say that it will grow my readership and my readership interaction, then I take that as a valid point.
It's one of these things that's really funny, Dave, because like I got a message from Andy Inokta, who's a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, but he's also very much into comic books and he reads PvP. And he was advising Danielle Corsetto and I to put our strip in our RSS feeds because he wanted to let us know that there is a demographic of people out there that don't read websites unless they're reading RSS feeds. And the fear is that if your strip's in the RSS feed, they don't come to your website, they don't see your ads, and so you can't monetize that.
Right.
But he said, do it for a month. Just do it for a month. Just go on and say, guys, the strip's going in the RSS feed for a month. It doesn't matter if you read my ads or not. And he said, you might find that you bring in new readers because people that subscribe to stuff on an RSS feed to see if they're going to taste the strip, you know, maybe they find your site, they subscribe to the RSS feed because they're going to try it out, and then realize they have to go to your site to try it out, and they say, screw it, I'm not going to do it.
Yep.
But if you hook them, if you hook them, they might then decide, I'm going to go to a site.
Right. Or more importantly, 10% of that RSS feed, when you make a blog post about some sale or some new book in your site, you've then made all those new RSS readers, you've then made sales to 10% of them.
That's true. So if you look at Twitter as another type of an RSS feed.
Then that's, yeah, okay. I see the value in that.
You see what I'm saying? It's kind of – I mean, Twitter is kind of like an RSS feed to your instant messages. I mean, that's I think what's very unique about the product that people have become attracted to it. But I was really pushing hard to get people to sign up for my Twitter feed, and I was pushing and making posts and saying please sign up, and got myself with a lot of pushing and being you know, kind of annoying about it up to about 2,000. And then I did another push, and it maybe went up 50, and I thought, you know, I'm pushing too hard, and forgot about it for a month. I went and checked today. I'm up past 3,000 without pushing. So I wonder if there's kind of like enough word of mouth, enough people who have me linked as followed, and they test it out and like it. So like I said, I mean, that's 3,000 people that are a captive audience for me, and I can tell them anything I want to. And if now they're a part of a special club, they're hearing things that no other PvP fan is hearing about because I'm only telling it to my Twitter feed.
Right, right. Okay.
When I start broadcasting my Ustream of drawing my strip, people can watch me draw the strip, Twitter feed finds out about it first. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, things like that.
All right, we get it. God.
I'm sorry. I brought it back to Twitter. Well, no, and you know what? The more you guys talk about it, the more what it's kind of gelling in my mind in is your comics blog is to Twitter what a sitcom is to reality television. And what I mean by that is your blog that you're updating regularly on your site is somewhat scripted. It's somewhat planned. You're putting a lot of prep into what you're putting down there. Mm-hmm. Your Twitter feed is kind of like reality television.
It's
unvarnished. It focuses a little bit on the mundane, but take a look at how popular reality television is. You know, it people want to know, hey, I do this quite a bit. I went down to the gym. I burned 300 calories. And part of it, I've been doing that just because it's kind of like a good positive feedback for me to keep going down and hitting the treadmill, right? And so I've been doing that. I get good feedback on that, you know. But it's nothing that I would ever put in the blog. It's the equivalent of reality TV for your blogging. Cricket.
I get it. No, that's a great comparison. Right? All right.
Everybody wants the big laugh tonight.
No, I was.
It just isn't happening.
I'm genuinely interested in this Twitter thing, so I was really soaking that in. I think that's.
Have you not signed up for it yet? What the hell? Have I not convinced you?
No, I'm going to do it right after this podcast.
All right, very good.
So to finish off answering that last question, Chris, we haven't heard much from you. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't remember what the question was.
How do you avoid waking up one day and finding that half your readership had disappeared?
It doesn't happen. I mean, as long as you're consistent with what you put out there, you'll never have an awakening where, I mean, even if it was a period longer than a night,
hey,
even
Chris,
if it was like 2 weeks, that's
Chris,
not going to happen.
You know the one example that you and I have talked about of the strip that is going even though it shouldn't anymore? The guy just keeps doing or girl just keeps doing it.
I'm not sure I know which one. I have a lot of those in mind.
Here, I will type it.
Chris.
I will no. I will type it to you here.
It's Eldon Shay.
The cartoonist pretty much only does it because of the nostalgia of that it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That is what happens. It happens over a period of years.
Oh, yeah. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying almost is that the bigger fear is what happens when you disappear on your readers.
Well, yeah. I mean,
That's going to do it much faster.
I think the bigger fear I think the question maybe the guy is asking and maybe is getting afraid is, has that happened to me? How do I know? How do I know when it's okay to keep going or it's time to cut bait and run? And I think that's a more difficult question. And we all four of us have had friends that have grappled with that and have even asked us our input on it.
Right.
You know, do I keep going with this? It's not producing near what I want it to. But I think that people get really emotional about these characters that we write about, and the people that get the most emotional about it are the people that create them. And you get married to these characters, they become your family, and to just abandon them is kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of a difficult decision to make. You know, when do you cut bait and run or start over or start something new? And all these questions, you know, like what happens if I wake up tomorrow and my readership is gone? I think those all are kind of maybe an insecure way of asking the real question, which is, should I give up on this strip that I'm doing right now? And I don't know. That's a tough call.
That seems like a topic that we would discuss in like year three of Webcomics Weekly podcast. You know, like
why?
Because it seems like such a big one to tackle. I don't think that anybody at this point you could say, oh yeah, quit, it's done. That's a different. It carries a different. There's a different level of giving up for everybody.
Well,
you know?
I mean, here's a thought that went through my head when Scott said what he said. What do I do if I wake up and I don't have any more readers? The first thing that popped in my head was, you got to find new readers. And there's two ways to do that. You either write your current strip better than you're writing it, or deliver it better than you're delivering it, or you've got to do a new strip. There's only two answers to that question.
Yeah.
You know, if I can take a harsher tone than even that, Brad, here's a thought about it, is that if you don't wake up every morning with a desire to cartoon, or not every morning, but let's say a majority of mornings, then you're not – if you wake up and you don't have the desire for 30 days in a row, 60 days in a row, well, then the sad truth is that's not there for you, and it's not going to work because the love won't be there and the passion into the work won't be there. So the thing is, if your strip is not working but you still have the passion – well, then what ends up happening is you go from doing Checkerboard Nightmare to Starslip, or you go from doing Greystone Inn to Evil Inc. You know what I mean? You'd redirect the passion.
That's true, but Dave, we've all had rough patches where for like maybe 2 or 3 weeks even we're going, God, I've got no idea for tomorrow, and I've got to do it again the next day and the next day.
Oh, sure. No, Chris, I'm not being like willfully hard-headed that like we don't all go through it. But what I'm saying is if you're going through the question of when do I quit and you don't have the passion – either put off the decision until you do have a firm notion of your sense of your own passion for it, or recognize that if it's been 2-3 months and you still don't have the passion for it, you're not gonna formulate the passion by willing it into existence. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think the passion is the issue. I think pretty much every cartoonist I've met, or a person that wants to be a cartoonist, they have an abundance of passion. It's everything else that they're missing.
I would disagree with you, though, Scott. Though
really?
Because what I see is I get friends or other cartoonists or people that come up to me at conventions and they go, why isn't it working for me? And within 5 minutes of talking to them, I can I would never say it to their face, but you get a sense of someone that they think they're working hard, but they're not working hard.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Maybe I'm not getting that far into the conversation. See, because for me what it always is you end up talking to them and they're like, oh, man, and I just want to do this and I really think this is the way to go. And you're connecting with them because in concept you agree with it. And they're like, anyway, so here's my work. And you look at it and you go, boo.
Oh, I see what you said.
And it's like, listen, dude, I know we just spent an hour discussing the, you know, like the complexities of reader communities, but you need to stop and back up and work on like the basic tenets of cartooning.
You need to stop and back up and leave a little bit of a margin inside your word balloon so you're
– Yeah, like, let's not worry about that. But
I think the stick man market is full, so let's maybe work on – yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I share something with you guys? I feel like we're connecting here, and since you mentioned that, Dave.
Jesus.
I want to hear.
My wife just announced to me that she's cheating on me, and I guess I just feel I need to talk about it. I found out today through a manner of a conversation. Just she blurted it out that she reads XKCD every day.
Oh.
And by the way, I just want to say this. I don't know who it's not a strip that I follow, although I respect that it's a wonderful strip. It's not. I don't think if I met this creator in person and I said, you know what, it's not for me, I don't think he would cry tears. But I know for a fact my wife doesn't follow my strip every day. And she's following XKCD and Octopus Pie. But I know she's reading Octopus Pie.
Look, cut her loose, Brad. Cut her loose. And tell the judge that she said she reads that piece of crap every day, and you will get full custody of those kids. She is an albatross around your neck, dude.
No one would convict. You know what I'm saying?
She has become an evangelist reader for XKCD. She turned her boss onto XKCD.
Wow.
She has turned into the reader that we all have warm feelings for, the evangelist reader.
Chris. Chris, you be Brad's wife's boss.
Okay.
I'll be Brad's wife.
Okay, here we go. Making sprockets.
What? Is that what they do?
Yeah, that's what she does.
No. She works at ITSRG, Internet Technology and Society Research Group at Temple University.
See, it's the same difference.
She's going to be really upset I just gave out all that information.
Okay, all right. I'll cut that out.
Yeah.
All right, so go ahead. John, you have got to check out this comic strip. It is so awesome. The stick figures dance around in a ballet cacophony of humor and math. It's awesome. It's called XKCD. You've got to check it out. It's so great. I mean, did you know comics are on the web? This thing is awesome.
Get back to work. I don't know where I was supposed to go with that.
Oh, did you not get the instant message I sent you?
No, I didn't. Oh, here it is. Here it is.
All right.
Isn't your husband a cartoonist?
He does a thing. Anyway, XKCD. I love how I send you the message. I set up the whole thing for you, and then you're like, get back to work.
I'm like, why am I the linchpin? You should have been the boss.
And why is Brad's wife working for Thomas Edison?
Get in here. I need you.
And she can quote strips that he's written. She can with the setup and the punchline, and then she'll say, "Well, I like the ones you do about the superhero family a lot when you do those, but when you get into the cape fights, I can't really follow it." But then she says, "But this, you know, XKCD did a really great one about the flow chart of a grapefruit. Anybody?"
I saw it. I actually saw
that old genius.
I didn't see that one.
And that's what she said, too. She said, that's the word she used, Dave, ingenious, as she was emasculating me on the couch.
On the couch, Brad.
Yikes.
Whoa.
Hold on. On the couch while we were talking.
Hey, Brad's wife.
Hey, boss.
Yeah.
Why can't my husband be more like XKCD guy?
You may need to talk
Brad,
to our
counselor. Brad, what you're saying is she's worried about your comics for performance.
Yeah.
Well, have you tried going more than what do you do? 7 days
she
a week,
goes,
5 days
she
a week.
Goes, I only read five comics. She goes, I only read six comics regularly. And I said six. She says, yeah. XKCD, Octopus Pie, BVP, Sheldon, Fleen. She counts as a comic. Fleen, and Starship Crisis.
Yours wasn't in there, dude.
And I said, and she got like halfway through, and I'm seeing where this is going, and I'm like, and she can see my eyes, and she said, no, I didn't mean six, I meant seven.
Oh, man. Brad, what are you going to do?
Brad.
I need help here, guys. I mean, you guys know if any...
Yes, you need to add a button to the end of every strip, and when you click on it, it goes...
No, Brad. Oh. I got it. Okay, you know how you've got... Evil Inc. is in color now, but you've got the radio button for black and white? Add another one, stick figure.
Brad, just every time... you need to add a last panel to every strip that just is one of your characters going, math!
More charts, Brad.
It's color, black and white, and then Pythagorean Theorem is the third one.
And it's the same strip.
But just a lot of cosines added into it. That'd be good.
I don't know that that's a unique experience for you, Brad. I mean, I think a lot of wives might not be able to enjoy their husband's strips as much as they do other people's strips because, you know, they're too close to it.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I think
I know. I mean, true. Erica writes Star Slip, so why would she want to read it?
She writes it. She produces it. She sells the merchandise. She ships the merchandise.
Right. I'm pretty much living on Easy Street here.
Yeah.
I can't complain.
Well, hold on a second. Is this Erica?
Yeah, she found out how to use like the voice modulator. She has a little Transformers thing.
The Mission Impossible voice box comes off. Well, Brad, I can one up you because my extremely talented wife, of whom I know of no funnier person on the planet, doesn't really respond to comics in general. I mean, she likes comics as much as if you show her a funny one, she will read it. But it's just not her, you know, in the same way that if someone would be like, oh, Dave, you want to read some more Faulkner? I love Southern literature. I would just be like, nah, not really for me. That's sort of how my wife is. And so I understand your pain of a spouse or a significant other that doesn't immediately grok, to use old man Kurtz's phrase.
Wow. Is she in cahoots with your wife?
Imagine my chagrin. I try to
chagrin.
Would you guys get on the trolley? Would you guys cut the mustard?
Listen, you mooks. I've got a point to make.
What? Whoa!
You mooks.
Mooks.
Is that a race? That's racist, right?
No, it's
no,
not.
God, I
oh,
it.
Oh.
No.
You're racist for thinking
I think
it was
it's
racist.
Way to twist that on me.
Here I am trying to introduce her to graphic novels and comics, and I introduce her to Octopus Pie, which now she reads more than she reads myself. It's not fair.
Brad, if you can't even get your wife to read your strip, that's trouble. I'd quit.
I'm telling you. I think I've reached that point that guy was worried about reaching. It's
Brad,
over.
You know what? Can I repurose my answer about what do you do? How do you know when to quit? When the passion is not there, Brad, maybe it is time to reconsider.
We're talking about your or the creator's passion, it's the creator's wife's passion.
But, you know, to play devil's advocate, Brad, you should be happy about that, I think, because I have family members that are way too into my strip, and I don't need their advice on how to fix it.
Scott, I used to be jealous of you before I started reading some of this stuff.
Hey, Dave, to point out how much she loves other strips, Brad gives me a call. Was it Tuesday? Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesday.
And it's like, hey, Scott, I got a call from my wife, and she's very concerned because your blog post said that your dad was very upset with you, and I just needed to call and make sure you're okay. Like, she's concerned about me.
That's the absolute truth. I had read the comic in the morning. I read it at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every morning. So I hadn't caught the blog post. She reads it later in the day. She catches the post, and she calls me up. She says, have you read Scott's blog? And I'm like, geez, I don't remember anything being...
Oh, Brad, you better call Scott and make sure he's okay.
That's literally what she said. She said,
I think he's in bad with his father.
I think he's upset.
What was that accent? Where'd
like
that come from?
She moved to Maine just so she could make sense. and I said, where in Manga are you? And she said, Bangor. I said, Bangor?
I hardly knew her. God. See, you wouldn't get that crap in XKCD. Jeez, Brad.
Bangor, I hardly integral E to the XDX. And if you integrate it, that's the joke.
Well, if you integrate.
Wow. All right, listen, that's an hour and 13 minutes.
That's my joke. Which of the roots are from Banger? I didn't even know her.
Wicker, I hardly knew her. All right. Now, listen.
Hey, actually, that does work.
Yes. But listen, that to remind everyone, if you go to the Webcomics Weekly forums at halfpixel.com and you would like to finish Brad's joke of, I didn't know they imported Wicker from, the best entry will receive a free sketch from moi, Scott Kurtz. So that's it. We're done.
And just so you guys heads up, in the next couple of weeks, we are going to have a recording of the Emerald City panel talk, which was fun. And we'll probably have another show that Brad did at Cape. And then one topic I want to cover, because I thought it was a good mailbag question, I'm just now remembering it, is the one about submitting your comic strip to quote-unquote contests that you can win online.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
That's a whole hour.
I
really think our next podcast should be about that. So the next one we record, I want to talk about contests that you can submit your quote-unquote comic to, or, sorry, quote-unquote contests you can submit your comic to.
Quote-unquote comic. I mean,
yep.
All right, so hugs and smooches to all three of you.
But, guys, don't hang up. I have some important questions to ask you after we're done recording.
Namely, how do we fix all the typos in Chris's chapters now that we're doing a play?
Oh, snap!
Oh, public embarrassment! Whoa!
Sorry.
I love how you became a Warner Brothers character. Yeah, sure, boss, sure, boss.
Wow, I pictured you putting your hands on your hip and nodding your head and going, sorry. All right, Webcomics Weekly out.